This hour, we're talking about how real-life experiences of writers have shaped their books. But what about an author's political beliefs, even their radical ones? Would you imagine that radical politics were behind any of these cherished stories?
One day, Danny went to the museum. He wanted to see what was inside. He saw Indians. He saw bears. He saw Eskimos. He saw guns. He saw swords. And he saw dinosaurs.
And then Harold made his bed. He got in it, and he drew up the covers. The purple crayon dropped on the floor, and Harold dropped off to sleep.
And then something went bump. How that bump made us jump. We looked. Then we saw him step in on the mat. We looked, and we saw him. The Cat in the Hat. And he said to us, "Why do you sit there like that? I know it is wet and the sun is not sunny, but we can have lots of good fun that is funny. I know some good games we could play," said the Cat. "I know some new tricks," said the Cat in the Hat. "A lot of good tricks. I will show them to you. Your mother will not mind at all if I do."
Those were excerpts from Danny and the Dinosaur, Harold and the Purple Crayon, and, of course, the Cat in the Hat. So, was Dr. Seuss a revolutionary, or did he just like to mess things up? To find out, we spoke with Julia Mickenberg, who teaches American Studies at the University of Texas at Austin. She's the co-author with Philip Nell of a book called Tales for Little Rebels. Mickenberg told Steve Paulson that some of the best-known children's book writers were longtime political radicals.
People who are interested in changing the world have to be looking toward the future and are therefore interested in children. So if you go back, you know, if you go back to the abolitionist movement, there was abolitionist children's literature and socialist movement, the communist movement, the New Left. You can find educational programs and children's literature associated with all of these movements. And some of the most famous children's authors of the 20th century were involved in radical politics and often wrote for children in association with that. So, for example, Sid Hoff, the author of Danny and the Dinosaur and many other I Can Read books, was an editor at The New Pioneer, a communist children's magazine, and also did work for The New Masses.
So does Danny and the Dinosaur have a clear political message, do you think?
I've spent a long time trying to find the political message in Danny and the Dinosaur, and I have not found it. I mean, he has a kind of anarchic sensibility, Sid Hoff does, in many of his works that have just a kind of silliness, you know, suggesting that what would seem like it couldn't happen actually could. And I think you can make a case for how that is somehow political.
It would seem that that kind of anarchic sensibility would apply to another radical writer, Crockett Johnson, author of Harold and the Purple Crayon.
Yeah.
You know, this, if people remember that book, you know, Harold, who is essentially creating the world as he draws, which on the surface doesn't seem political, but I suppose it is.
Yeah, and actually, the way Philip Nell and I originally got in touch was that I knew about his research on Crockett Johnson. He's completing a biography of Crockett Johnson and Ruth Krauss, his wife, who also is a wonderful writer, wrote books like The Carrot Seed, which is very well known, that Crockett Johnson illustrated. And Johnson also was, I think he worked on The New Masses and also did work for the New Pioneer.
Well, I mean, because there are two ways to look at this. One is that these are children's writers, some of whom have become well known over the years, and they had a history in radical politics. Maybe they were activists. Maybe they worked on various leftist publications back in the 30s, 40s, or 50s. But their children's books that they're well known for really aren't political. That was a separate thing they did. Or we could look for the actual political content in the children's books that have come down to us.
Yeah. So for my first book, I was really interested in children's books that reached a broad audience that were written by radicals. For example, many of the Golden Books were written by radical writers. Or
the Little Golden Books.
The Little Golden Books and the Giant Golden Books. I mean,
these were the things that were to help children learn to read.
Yeah. The little golden books have pictures of black and white children together from really far going back. And the original I Can Read books came out of the Bank Street College of Education, which was started by Lucy Sprague Mitchell, whose books were very popular in the Soviet Union. She herself was a socialist, and she was a big proponent of these here and now books. So the idea is that children should be exposed to books that really represent their own world, and that gives them more of a feeling of control over their world and understanding how their world works. And Bank Street College of Education was also connected with Columbia Teachers College and also tied to the nursery school movement, which was seen as very socialist, the idea that mothers should be able to go to work and children would learn from a very early age some kind of collective feeling in nursery school. So they are really tied back. And also just the idea of books being 25 cents. And they were very nicely produced and affordable. And so it was a kind of books for the masses idea. And
going back to the earlier thing that you mentioned, black kids and white kids appearing in the same book playing together. I mean, that was really, when you think about it, a radical concept. I mean, going back to the 1930s and 40s, that just, you never saw that
you didn't
in
see
the
it.
Mass media.
And another thing that I did for Learning from the Left was I interviewed, in addition to authors and editors and illustrators, I also interviewed some red diaper babies. And one person I talked to mentioned the book Two is a Team by Gerald and Lorraine Byme, who wrote many, many books, very popular authors. So in the book Two is a Team, it shows a black child and a white child who are best friends, doesn't talk about race at all, and it was published in 1945. And she talked about getting that book as a gift, and she said, I knew that was a radical book, just putting those two kids in the same book. And in fact, the writer Dorothy Sterling said, and she was only half joking, if you found a book that positively portrays black people published before 1965, it was written by a communist. Hmm. One of the main reasons for that was that publishers were really scared to publish anything that would kind of rock the status quo because they could lose all the Southern market. Herman and Nina Schneider were very popular science writers, and their books started selling so well that they were able to insist that they wouldn't write any more books unless they could have illustrations that would show black and white kids in the pictures.
Now, science is another interesting subject here because a lot of these radical writers really believed in the power of science and wrote science books for kids.
Yeah, there's a whole litany of explanations for this. One of the reasons that I started really looking at science was that International Publishers, which was the Communist Party publishing house, started a book series for children in 1945 called Young World Books. And this series gave the start to some of the best and most popular science writers. I was able to interview the woman who had started Young World Books, Betty Bacon. So I asked her, why did you publish so many books about science? And she looked at me like I was an idiot and said, well, to teach dialectical materialism, which I might have come up with like as like a ridiculous thing to say. But she, from a very sort of orthodox Marxist view, the idea was that if you teach children to think scientifically, they will automatically become Marxists because Marxist thinking is scientific thinking. Mm-hmm. And I did actually find books that were paraphrasing Engels. But again, if you weren't looking for this, you would never find it.
So why did a lot of these radicals focus on children? You've already said that, well, children are the future in a way. So I suppose if we can mold their minds, then, you know, we can help create the future society. But there were also economic and political pressures, weren't
they? Yeah. So, you know, one of the most exciting interviews I had was with Pete Seeger, the musician who actually, when he was blacklisted, was only able to perform for children. So I should say that this wasn't just a phenomenon of books. There was, you know, Ring Lardner Jr., when he was blacklisted, did the Robin Hood TV show for kids. Mm. I think the children's book field was relatively open and people didn't pay it much attention. It was seen to be run by little old ladies who had to be harmless, who were looking out for kids.
Now, wasn't the poet Langston Hughes also blacklisted?
Yes. He had been interested in children, had written for children already, but children's literature became one of his main sources of income. He used to go on lecture tours, and those began to be canceled, and other book contracts. And he started doing these First Books, which was a popular series. But the way that he got the job was there were two communist authors, Franklin Folsom and Mary Elting Folsom, who had done tons of First Books. And they were complaining to the publisher, Franklin Watts, that he was racist. There were no African-Americans in the First Books. And Franklin Watts said, no, of course I'm not a racist. You get me a black writer and I'll do a First Book of Negroes. So they brought him Langston Hughes. And so Hughes, at this point, was right as he was doing that, he was getting called before the House Committee on Un-American Activities, and he was really trying to prove how not radical he was. And so he wanted to write as, you know, as tame a children's book as he could. But what happened was the initial draft of his story, the editors at Franklin Watts sent it to Mary Elting Folsom to check it out. And she said, this is not doing enough to emphasize the real conditions of discrimination and segregation. And the book actually has pretty significant commentary then on discrimination. It's about a little boy who goes to visit his, in one part, he goes to visit his cousin in the South, and they say how he couldn't, you know, they had to sit in the back of the bus. And it even talks about some housing discrimination in the North. And but that wouldn't be in there if it weren't for the niggling voices of these other people.
And then there's Dr. Seuss, perhaps the most famous, one of the certainly the most famous children's book writers of the last century. Not a communist, but definitely a man of the left.
Yeah, and he had several people, including Phil Nell, have done a lot of work on Seuss and his politics. He was a cartoonist for PM, which was an anti-fascist kind of popular front newspaper, and he did lots of caricatures of Hitler and Hirohito. And then he was also what I would call an anti-communist. He made lots of drawings that were sort of mocking the whole McCarthyite investigation. And then certainly his, you know, liberal or left politics show through in so many of his books.
What about Cat in the Hat?
I've just finished co-editing the Oxford Handbook of Children's Literature, and we have an essay in there that's on the cat, relating the Cat in the Hat to this sort of 60s sensibility, even though it's published in, I think, in 1959. This sort of mockery of adults very much plays into that new left sensibility. It's an interesting essay. And then there are more obvious books. There's The Lorax, which is probably the about environmental conservation, a very clear political message. The Butter Battle Book is really a condemnation of nuclear war. And then The Sneetches. It was originally about anti-Semitism, but it's really about respecting differences and all that. So yeah, I think Seuss is a very clear example of somebody who's doing work that's political, but it's also fun to read.
Then our mother came in, and she said to us two, "Did you have any fun? Tell me, what did you do?" And Sally and I did not know what to say. Should we tell her the things that went on there that day? Should we tell her about it? Now, what should we do? Well, what would you do if your mother asked you?
That was Kelsey Grammer reading from The Cat in the Hat. Steve Paulson spoke with Julia Mickenberg, co-author of the book Tales for Little Rebels.